This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
The difference now is that the hurt is coming from the conservative side of the political spectrum. And it's very hard to tell because we haven't really seen that before, whether or not the reform momentum can supplant the Conservative Party by saying, yeah, if you like it on the right, you're our kind of people.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
In this week's episode, we hear how Kent Police isn't sure where the countryside is anymore. Medway Council is deciding whether to go it alone. Sevenoaks braces itself for a massive influx of new housing. And one MP has had some explaining to do over donation. I'm Simon Finney, the local democracy reporter covering Kent County Council. And I'm joined by Dan Essen, who reports on borough and district councils.
Hello there.
Robert Boddy, who covers Medway Council.
Hello.
And senior news editor, Nikki White.
Hello.
Our special guest today is the political commentator, Sean Holden, who is going to talk about the state of the Conservative Party. But first up, Dan, what have you been looking at?
So I've yet again revisited Sevenoaks District Council's local plan. Like a lot of councils, they had a spanner thrown in the works by the new government's planning reforms since they started working on the plan well before the current government was elected. Basically, they've released a new version of the local plan to cover the next 15 years to consult the public on soon because of how significant the increase in housing targets has been under the new government's way of calculating them.
How high in Sevenoaks' case?
Basically, their yearly house building target is up by 63%, just up from just over 700 a year to about 1,150. So the previous version of the plan, which I first covered way back in October 2023, was allocating land for about 10,700 homes over the course of 15 years. The new target, however, means they're going to have to build more than 17,000 homes over that period of time. It's important to mention as well that while their previous target was more than 700 a year, over the few years before they got hit with this new target, their actual average amount built was only about 260. So in practice, hitting this target means there'll be about four or five times as much housing built in Sevenoaks as residents have been used to over the recent years.
And where are they going to put all these new homes and what's the timeline?
So even in previous versions of the plan, they were already proposing a large new settlement of 2,500 homes at Pedham Place, which is still on the cards. But to hit a new target, there's only really one like major huge new site they've introduced, which is some land near Otford Road north of Sevenoaks town itself, which is now slated for 1,500 homes. The rest is made up by comparatively smaller new sites of a few hundred homes here and there all over the place, largely in what's now called the Grey Belt. Sevenoaks is officially 93% metropolitan greenbelt, but they did an assessment of the land in the districts on the new government guidelines and found loads of greenbelt right on the edge of towns, basically, which is now greybelt, and they can build on it. So as it stands, the council is going to vote to start a seven-week consultation on October 9th, and they hope to submit the final version of their plans to the government around Christmas time next year.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Robert, what's been happening in Medway?
This week, Medway Council announced its cabinet would be considering looking into a business case for the local government reorganisation option, which it put forward but was not selected by fellow Kent leaders at the meeting earlier this month. Two versions, one with three councils and another with four, were selected to be put forward, but Medway has announced it may go ahead with doing the work to prepare its map, a four-council version with different boundaries, for submission in November off its own back.
Is there an additional cost to that, Rob?
There is, yes. The two shortlisted options are funded by the government. Any other options which are submitted in November will have to be funded by those who submit them. So Medway, Reforms KCC, who are also looking to put forward their own version with just one mega council, and any other council which wants to put forward a different option, as I understand there are, will have to self-fund their bids. Medway put aside £874,000 at its budget in February for costs relating to local government reorganisation, and the council says that's enough to cover the research and the work required for this. The authority's cabinet will decide whether to go ahead with a business case at its meeting on September 23rd.
Simon, what's been going on at County Hall?
Well, there's plenty going on at County Hall, but this week I listened in to the Kent Police and Crown Commissioner's Performance and Delivery Board. This is when the Commissioner, Matthew Scott, is meant to put the Chief Constable on the rack and hold him to account. But in reality, these are much more convivial and friendly affairs where the Chief Constable talks through the latest crime stats.
And how is Kent doing?
Well, apart from a 9% rise in shoplifting, which will come to no surprise to anyone, most other classifications of crime in Kent are now down. Serious violence, victim victim-based crimes, knife crimes, domestic abuse, antisocial behaviour and stuff like that are all down. So well done to the Kent Police, although some folk in the real world might be a little bit sceptical, but we can only report on the stats. The Chief Constable's report did make a curious observation about rural crime. The report says rural crime covers, and I quote, offences in non-urban areas, which include agricultural theft, you know, equipment, livestock rustling, fly tipping and wildlife crimes. But then it says, I quote, due to the changing landscape of wards in Kent, those that may have once been classed as rural, land and development may now class them as urban areas. Kent Police is not able to define what rural and urban wards currently are. That seems to indicate there has been so much building and house building in particular that the police cannot define what is rural anymore and don't feel that they are in a place to do so. So it's a bit of a sign of the times, perhaps, in that remark. Nikki, what's been happening down your way?
Well, Parliament is back in recess again, this time for conference season, so you can expect a few headlines to come out of those in the coming weeks. However, in the meantime, the old thorny issue of donations is back in the news, and this time for Citybourne and Sheppey MP Kevin McKenna.
OK, what's been going on there?
He's been criticised for accepting a donation from Homes for Britain, which is a pro-housing development campaign group. As you can imagine, not everyone is in favour of new homes being built, and some aren't happy with what's going on. Now, the Register of Members' financial interest lists the payment to Mr. McKenna as one of £3,500, although he says the actual amount is £2,800 and the discrepancy is down to an admin error by his team. Now, either way, a donation of hundreds of pounds has been made, spread over several payments of £500 a month. Now, some say Mr. McKenna's pro-housing stance goes against the wishes and interests of his constituents, especially amid the controversy, which we've done a lot on, and that's the Heisted Park development. That's a project which could see 8,400 homes built to the east and south of Sittingbourne if it's approved. But Mr. McKenna has come back. He's defended accepting the donation, and he's saying that the money is to help not only him but also other Labour MPs with communications so that they can campaign more effectively on the issues that matter. He says he backs the government's pledge to get Britain building and help meet those housing targets, saying he's been a long-term campaigner not only for more homes but also the essential infrastructure to support them, which is what often gets people so upset. He says Homes for Britain is a campaign group that shares those aims and has chosen to support him by donating the services of a firm that provides general communication support to Labour MPs.
Anything else caught your eye?
Yeah, one of our colleagues, Chris Britcher, he's interviewed Canterbury MP Rosie Duffield on how she feels a year after she quit Labour, her hopes of a return to the party and her prediction that Keir Starmer's days are numbered. It's a fairly in-depth piece, so too much to mention in detail here, but it's definitely worth a read if you haven't caught up with it yet.
Yeah, we will be returning to that topic about Starmer a little later on.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
The Conservative Party is under huge pressure at the moment, and its leader, Kemi Badenoch, is under more pressure than most. The polls are terrible, and each week seems to bring one or more high-profile defection from its rank to Reform UK, who the pollsters are saying are most likely to win the next general election. With us is our old friend Sean Holden, former political journalist and former Conservative councillor. Welcome back, Sean.
Nice to be back.
Thanks for coming on. Sean, look, you've been around the block a few times, and you've seen Tory leaders come and Tory leaders go, and the party suffer some pretty amazing highs and some pretty amazing lows. Do you think the way things are at the minute, the Conservative Party's finished?
I'm a student of history, and the Conservative Party has been in history for a long time, since the 17th century in some form or another. But where it's had damage in the past, notably, say, the Blair landslides and other occasions, the 1945 election, it's been hurt by its political opponents. The difference now is that the hurt is coming from the Conservative side of the political spectrum. And it's very hard to tell, because we haven't really seen that before, whether or not the Reform momentum can supplant the Conservative Party by saying, yeah, if you like it on the right, you're our kind of people.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to say if that will happen, but it is looking a bit grim for the party, I think.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Do you think that Kemi Badenoch's leadership is doomed?
Not necessarily. I have to confess, I was disappointed since we voted for her in the election and in the leadership election, and I voted for her in the leadership election, because I thought she was going to hand out to a possible other doomed leader, Keir Starmer, a good thrashing every so often, certainly at Prime Minister's Question Time. She hasn't really done that until last week, when she really ripped him to pieces over the Peter Mandelson.
Yeah.
And she did what I actually voted for her to do. And she did it again yesterday, I think, in the debate on the Mandelson scandal. What she's got to do is to keep up that momentum. It's not about, for voters, I don't think it's about parliamentary procedure or experience. It's about getting across the political battle and leading your troops in that way. Much more important than parliamentary procedure or in sort of mouthing off well-meaning policies.
But there is a problem, because if she goes beyond the confrontation, then she'll be up to her year, and that year is the cut-off point in which people in the party can start taking pot shots at her in terms of having her replaced. The big question was, can she survive up until or even beyond the local elections, the Welsh Senate and the Holyrood elections next year?
The Conservative Party didn't seem to be learning any lessons in recent years when it was chopping the leader about and changing and not having the nerve to stand up. But it has seen what that does to its perception in the public. And it's not very good. It's harmful.
What are the things that about Badenoch that you particularly liked that made you vote for her? And why isn't she able to translate that into, you know, popularity or connection with the voter? Or is that just a Conservative Party problem?
No, I think that it's been that I don't know if her advisors or she has chosen to be kind of measured, appearing to be reasonable. But that doesn't cut across on the television, doesn't cut across on social media. And the reason I voted for her was because I'd seen her in Parliament on a number of occasions, most notably when she took Angela Rayner absolutely to pieces in a superb and forensic fashion. And I thought that was what we were going to get. And that was what we got last week when she did in Keir Starmer. And it's what we got yesterday. And so it's got to be that her advisors are saying, there's that. That's the way to go, Kemi. Don't talk piously about policy and this, that and the other. Go for them. The opposition is to oppose. The opposition is to have hits on the government. And that's what she's doing. She's done that really well in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. So you think there's still a bit of hope for Kemi Badenoch then?
Yes. If she keeps on that track.
But the trouble is that, you know, this week alone, we've had so far, at the time of recording, we've had three defections from the Conservative Party to Reform UK, one of whom is a sitting MP and a former government minister. I mean, it's a terrible logo, isn't it?
It is. Nobody could deny the party is in a really bad patch right now. And the defections are, we hope, not the beginning of a wave. I think at the moment, the public who don't follow politics like you and I do, Simon, will be saying, oh, well, that's what's going to happen, isn't it? I thought all the Tories were going over to Reform. I know I have, and so on. That's how people will be looking at it. If it continues like that, and we continue to lose parliamentary members, then yes. And I see on the discussion websites, for instance, like the Conservative Home, there is repeated comments that we have to get the Lib Dems out of the party. And the feeling, which I share actually, that the parliamentary party badly let down the party in the Sunak administration. And even although I have a lot of time for Boris Johnson and he got Brexit done, some of the stuff he's doing there, particularly the Green stuff, it seemed to be blind to how the electorate see things. And I think that if we don't go more towards conservatism, and lots of people are saying, I haven't left the party. The party left me.
Yeah, lots of people say that. Yeah.
And that's what we need to address and get back to.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit of a cliche, but it is kind of true, because what they're saying in Reform is what they want the Conservative Party to be. Because, you know, sometimes, you know, I look at the at Reform UK and I'm just reminded, not of the BNP, quite the reverse. What I see is just a reminder of what the Conservative Party used to be like in the late 1980s and the early 1990s.
I agree. I found in Reform's programme, not much that I could disagree with, and where I would hope that the Conservative Party would go. It really irritates me that it's presented as a far-right party or right-wing party. It's a Conservative Party, more to the right than, well, current, certainly than the pre-election Conservative Party was, but it's not a sort of fascist party, and it really irks me when people say that. That's why they've got so many of our voters.
Yeah, but the way that the Conservative Party got itself electable again in 2010, having been sort of in the wilderness for quite a few years, was to do just that, was to move everything to the centre, because that's where the voters were at the time. And then gradually, as sort of things have got worse, especially in the economy after 2008, you know, people's lives have not got really that much better, and slowly everything sort of has shifted more towards the right or more to the margins of political thought, because they feel as if there's nowhere else to go.
It did move towards the centre under David Cameron, of necessity, of course, because there was a coalition with the Lib Dems, and so that was a weighty.
But Cameron was really centrist. He wasn't a Thatcherite Tory. He was very much sort of closer to the centre than anywhere else.
Well, I think that he had to. I think he was moved that way. I knew David Cameron from when he was 25 years old, and I was the head of broadcasting in the Conservative general election in 1999, and he was an advisor then. I knew him then, and I wouldn't say that he was over centrist. I think that that was more his inclination, but that he moved that way because of the Lib Dem coalition and because that seemed to be the sensible way to sort of capture the Blairite vote that had deserted.
Which clearly he did, because, you know, he went into coalition and obviously got a majority then for the following time. You know, okay, well, let's presume that Kenny Bedingfield can't survive. I mean, it's unlikely she's going to win the next election, in which case she'd probably gone anyway, but say she can't survive the current threat and she is forced out. You know, we wonder where the talent is going to come from. We know that, you know, one Kent MP, Tom Tugendhat, has made it very clear that he wants to be, you know, wanted to be the party leader when he stood last year. But can you see anybody else in the current crop that we've got? I mean, it's a pretty thin, shallow pool.
I think that we're better off than the Labour Party, who if they get rid of Keir Starmer, which I think is not impossible, that they will do in fairly short order, as disaster opens up every single day for Keir Starmer's premiership. So the one place you could look, and I'm not necessarily being creepy because I haven't had much to do with her, is the Weald of Kent MP Katie Lamb, who is actually my MP, and I voted for her when we had the selection for the new constituency. And Katie Lamb, she could be characterised as a sort of Margaret Thatcher 2.0. She came with, I think, I've seen her in blue suits, and she has a lovely bouffant blonde hair, and she has the same political attributes and attitudes of Margaret Thatcher, and she is very smart. She's very quick. And she is very strong speaker. And I think she had, I said on the day when it was the first time I saw her, this woman has star quality, without doubt. She's only 34, I think. But that doesn't matter if you're good. I mean, after all, William Pitt was 24, and the King said to him, "Well, you're very young, Mr. Pitt." And Pitt said, "Time will remedy that, Your Majesty." And he was a hugely successful prime minister and war leader, and oversaw the abolition of the slave trade, of the Atlantic slave trade. So youth isn't necessarily a barrier. And Katie has, I think, a huge amount of potential, because she has all the qualities you look in: leadership, intelligence, and an appeal to people in her whole persona. So I'm very optimistic about it. On the other hand, I don't know if she listens to this, I wouldn't say, before she gets too swollen up with pride, of course, history is littered with the greatest prime ministers we never had. So we have to be cautious about it.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you think that she would be able to command enough support in the wider parliamentary party? Are you not close enough to that?
I think she will garner that as she goes through. She's only been in Parliament for a year. But I think that the key thing is that they would be looking at her to see how she works on television, how she works in social media. The public, the voters, are interested in that much more than they're interested in how long has she been grasping parliamentary procedure and early day motions and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you mean David Cameron only been an MP for a few years before he became leader, so I mean, it's not an absolute necessity. And the thing is that if they chose someone like Katie Lamb sort of in this sort of parliament, you know, you're not going to win the next election. So there's plenty of time for that leader, whoever that person is, he or she is, to sort of bed in. And that's presuming that, you know, Kemi Badenoch doesn't sort of lead it into the next election and win it. But that seems unlikely. So the successor must be waiting in the wings at some point.
I think that Kemi could be the person to lead us into the election if she continues on the current, very recent form, which I'd seen like 2 years ago or whatever, and haven't had since. I think we have some depth, because apart from Katie Lamb, we have much more experience, but he is proving himself very effective in taking on the government, Robert Jenrick. And I didn't vote for him in the leadership because I thought we needed to look different, and Robert Jenrick was just going to come along as, well, just some bloke, like, yeah, you know, yeah, that's what you expect to be running the Tories. But he's actually shone out since then.
Yeah.
And so I think that he's done a lot better. So he is also, you know, a possibility.
Yeah. You know, you've been away from KCC politics for a little while, and are you missing it much?
No, I decided I was 70 this year, and I'd been doing KCC for 12 years. I'd been 16 years on Tunbridge Wellsborough Council, and I did 4 years in a Hampshire council before that. So I think I've done my... Well, and I was also a parliamentary candidate, and I was the head of broadcasting for the Conservative Party in the 1992 election, what we then called the spin doctor. We wouldn't say that now. And so I've done my bit. So I don't miss it. And I'm traveling and I'm doing my hobby, which is kind of military history and stuff. So I don't miss it, but I do keep an eye on it.
Yeah.
And you could not be fascinated by seeing the huge turnover in KCC.
Yeah. Have you been keeping a close eye on the comings and goings and the shenanigans at County Hall since then?
I haven't looked at the details in the way that I would have been aware of. Yeah, but I mean, sure. I'm interested by the overarching... no more borrowing, the £140 million saving. And I'd be interested in seeing how far they can carry that stuff through. It's become the fashion for politicians to talk about making difficult decisions, which they then don't make. But they do need to make difficult decisions on the county council. And I know that they're saying no more borrowing, and they're cancelling the green buildings updates and electric cars and stuff. And I think they've actually reduced councillors' allowances or done something to
I think it's about 5% across the board. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You do have to make just those difficult decisions. And we, I think, dodged them. There's £100 million being spent on home to school transport for special educational needs. They have to do something about that.
That's definitely one of their targets. And it was when Nigel Farage came here in, I think, early July, that was very much sort of at the forefront of his mind. He seems to think that there are ways, either through amending contracts or trying to make it more efficient day to day, or find different ways of doing it, that there could be savings made there. You know,
we're hearing stories of people paying taxis £80 each way to go to the right school. You've got to look at that. But the problem is, politically, it's quite spiky. And when two conservative councillors said a couple of years ago they thought that not everybody was actually needing to have special educational needs, they got hammered.
And that was over healthcare plans. And
we have to look at that, because it was issuing 20%
more
above the national average.
Yeah.
And so you've got to, but that means, but difficult decisions means you've got to say to people, sorry, you can't have that.
Yeah.
Politicians are scared of doing that.
I don't think that Reform UK have any such sort of regard for the finer feelings of others.
You can say that, etc. I think that and it's to be seen if they are going to make those kind of decisions. We repeatedly proudly boast that of the 99 libraries in Kent, we hadn't closed any. Well, I kept saying, well, I think we should close some. But then they say, oh, well, you think, realise the political ramifications of that in the divisions where it happens. And think, yeah, but we've got to do something to stop this endless spiral of debt and overspending. And so I'm interested to see if reform takes those kind of things on.
Well, the proof of the pudding, I guess, will be when they have to set the budget and whether they can do that. And once if they get through this one, then they're probably going to have to get through the next one after that. And, you know, and everybody seems to agree who's been around County Hall for quite a long time, there really isn't very much in the way of savings to find. So, you know, they may get through this budget, but the one after that.
But of course, the one after that
may like, coincide with local governments. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so because they're going to reform local government and we end up with three unitary authorities and then it becomes a massive so what.
Listen, Sean Holden, thank you very much indeed for your time today and hope to speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
Talking of party leaders being deposed, there's been a lot of noise around Sir Keir Starmer of late being upended by the Labour Party and Andy Burnham as a possible successor. Rob, you've written your opinion piece this week on this very subject. Do you think it's a complete non-runner?
I think yes, at the moment at least. I think basically you have to look at who's saying this. The people who are really amplifying it are from the Conservatives, from Reform. And while there are people within the Labour Party who are saying this, I think, you know, as Nikki mentioned, Rosie Duffield, although not in the Labour Party, but a former Labour MP.
So they're usually from the disaffected wing, yeah, like the
exactly.
People who complain about everything.
Yeah. Richard Bergen is another one who, yes, is a Labour MP.
Great stringer.
And he is not happy with Keir Starmer, and he was never going to be happy with Keir Starmer. They come from very different elements of the Labour Party. I think it would be mad for the Labour Party to get rid of Keir Starmer at this point. I think further on down the track, if he doesn't have personal opinion poll ratings higher towards the next election, we might see something like we saw in Canada where Justin Trudeau resigned and Mark Carney came in. Everyone thought the Labour Party in Canada would lose that election and then they won it. So I think that's the most, I don't want to say likely scenario, but of the options where Keir Starmer is kicked out, I think that's
but
the one.
But it's some way down the track.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that Andy Burnham would win a by-election.
No, absolutely. And I think already I've started to see on social media, I mean, there is a general perception that Andy Burnham's very popular and within Manchester, I think certainly he is. But already we've started to see online some people criticising him, dredging up things from the previous, because he did stand for the leadership back in 2015 and lost. So I think this idea that he's, you know, universally popular isn't entirely true. And I think the sad fact is that any Labour leader will become unpopular as soon as they become Labour leader.
But the Prime Minister is a completely different thing. I mean, as it stands, according to the latest polling, I mean, they're going to be decimated.
Yeah, and I think they're in a very tough spot. I do think that this is a very difficult position for any government to be in. The obvious hope inside Downing Street and inside the government is that it's going to be painful for probably this year and next year, but can they turn it around? If we're getting, as I say, towards the end of the parliament and things still are looking bad, then, you know, I think Reform are going to make hay with it. I don't see the Conservatives making much headway. I think Kemi Badenoch, although she's saying Keir Starmer's on his way out, in November is when the sort of grace period for her leadership comes up and letters
and
can
conferences,
be...
And conferences
exactly.
Over, yeah.
So she could be on very shaky ground at that point, but we'll have to wait and see.
Do you think the Starmer will at least get as far as the council elections and the Welsh Senate and the Scottish elections?
Definitely, and if Labour do really poorly in those elections, these suggestions that he should step aside or whatever.
At which point, they'll have been for nearly 2 years.
Mm,
so there's potentially 3 years left in the parliament. So you would want to, you know, a fair amount of time to bed somebody in and for that person to maybe turn the fortunes around.
Yeah, I think so. Everything's possible. You know, as I say, I personally think it would be mad to get rid of him now, but that wouldn't stop some politicians from doing it. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, Nikki?
It just feels like every time you blink at the moment, someone has switched parties.
That's right.
So it should probably come as no surprise that thoughts of being leaders being ousted are gathering momentum. And as you mentioned earlier, one person who'd be delighted to see Sir Keir Starmer go is right here in Kent, and that's Canterbury's Rosie Duffield. And as I mentioned earlier, she recently sat down with our colleague Chris Britcher for an in-depth interview, and she made no secret of the fact that she'd love to return to the Labour Party, but as she says, never in a million years under Starmer. Now, whether you think it was the right decision or not when she quit Labour a year ago, just 3 months after the election, it was a break brave and bold thing to do. She clearly felt very strongly about the direction the party was heading, strong enough that she was willing to go independent and face some of the inevitable backlash she was going to get, although not all of that has been justified, in my opinion. I mean, she said in a resignation letter, Starmer's early days were cruel and unnecessary, and she'd criticised his management style. She now says that the common consensus within the party is that the PM has less than a year in office remaining. And you've got to think at the moment at the way people are feeling, and I'm talking about the general electorate as well as party members, she's possibly right. I mean, both Labour and the Tories need to get their ducks in a row as soon as possible if either of them think they've got a chance of winning the next election. I mean, it may be some way off, but they need to get their leaders in place and leaders that they can commit to and show that their parties are united and heading in the same direction. All the members are joined together. I mean, at least then we as voters can make a confident choice when we do eventually head to the ballot box.
I mean, I basically agree with everything that's been said. I think it's highly unlikely and would be quite risky and dangerous. I also think it's kind of telling that some people, at least in the parliamentary Labour Party and in the broader Labour Party, seem to think that if only they can change the leader, they can find somebody who, through force of personality, can fix all their woes. And I think that's definitely not the case. The forces arrayed against them are so significant that they could have the most charismatic and forward-thinking leader possible, and I think at this point it probably won't help them much. You know, they were elected on, you know, the votes of less than 20% of eligible voting British adults. It's the most disproportionate election in terms of popular vote to parliamentary seats ever, if I remember what the electoral reforms.
Yeah, but that often, in fairness, Dan, that sometimes does happen, where you get a relatively low vote and a very high share of the seats. So that's not unusual.
Yeah, but the a report by the Electoral Reform Society analysing last year's election result found it is the most disproportionate ever by quite some distance. And I think that's basically the culmination of a very long-term process of the Labour Party becoming, well, all British political parties, but particularly Labour, becoming, you know, the public just completely losing faith in them. The existing parties are falling to pieces. And the idea that if only they get a leader who's popular and friendly and charming enough, compared to Starmer, who many perceive to be a void of personality, the idea that any one individual can help them at this point, I think, is probably beyond the pale.
It just goes to show that actually the only party leader we have in the country at the minute, which is, he's got any sort of like standing, is Ed Davey in the Liberal Democrats. I mean, you know, he's actually carved out a sort of peculiar little niche for himself, in as much as they've got lots and lots of MPs, probably more than they've ever had, and they've actually got a party leader that people like.
Yeah. Well, and he's had to achieve it by humiliating himself in public for several months in the run up to the general election.
So, yeah, but he'd always say that has a message.
Yeah, I mean, I think we like about. I think those stunts are quite demeaning to the standing of democratic politics and quite revealing about the state of the Liberal Democrats, that is their only conceivable way to get attention. But I certainly wouldn't advise any other party to try that.
That's your lot, folks. And thanks to Dan, Robert and Nicky for their contributions, and to our special guest this week, Sean Holden. Don't forget to keep an eye on Kent Online for the latest politics coverage. You can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter by visiting kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't miss KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.